Welcome, welcome. We are back for another episode of The Lock-In, brought to you in association with WPT Global. I am Scandinavian poker champion, Dundee chopper, David Lappin. And joining me, as usual, is my fellow WPT Global ambassador and Simplify Poker's resident guru, Darragh O'Kearney. Darragh, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, David. Delighted to be here. It's a while since we've done one of these sit-down ones, as opposed to out on the road.
Exactly right. Darragh, you and your team over there at Simplify Poker, I know, are working very hard at the moment. I believe you're working on a new course aimed at three-way or multi-way spots. It involves, I know, a co-creator of yours and former guest, actually, of this show, Turlough McHugh. Can you tell me a bit about it?
Yeah, my philosophy of coaching has always been it shouldn't just be me giving my opinions. I don't like coaching content which is just the player, whoever, giving their opinions, however good they might be. Because, you know, in a year's time, the solver suddenly comes along and now it can do the spot that you're talking about, and it turns out you were completely wrong. Sometimes we've had to make guesses. Like, for example, when we wrote the ICM book, the solvers weren't able to do post-flop yet, so we kind of had to do guesswork there. Luckily, we got pretty much everything right. But now, you know, GTO Wizard recently introduced three-way solves. There are other good multi-way solvers out there, like Rocket Solver. Myself and Turlough actually started working on this with Rocket Solver almost a year ago now, I guess. And then once GTO Wizard came along, we just kind of switched to GTO Wizard. And I think, you know, that's an area where there's a lot of gains to be made. People are very studied now in heads up pots. The solvers have been able to do that for 10 years now. So, you know, and even people who don't work with solvers, they play with players who are studied with solvers, and they kind of pick stuff up that way. But multi-way has always been sort of a kind of a mystery. And there's going to be a period where people who study this or put a bit of work into it are going to be a lot better than everybody else. Even the top players are playing multi-way pretty badly in a lot of cases. It's actually relatively easy to learn, bizarrely enough. There's just a couple of key principles you need to understand. And that's kind of the way we've laid out the course. We're not focusing on in granular detail on, oh, well, you know, if you have ace jack in this spot, you should raise 20% of the time and you should call 70% of the time. It's more about trying to, we spent the year basically trying to identify, like, what are the overarching principles that if you understand these, you'll be fine, you'll be able to navigate. And, you know, that works from three-way to four-way to multi-way. And, you know, as we all know, in lower stakes games in particular, there's far more multi-way pots than heads-up pots.
Absolutely, and in live poker too. Well, speaking of multi-way, this show rarely, if ever, is a two-hander. We like our lock-ins like we like our pots. There was a ruder way for me to do the segue, by the way, and I decided against it. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome to the show our great pal and Party Poker Live ambassador, Natalie Bromley. Natalie, welcome.
I'm disappointed that it didn't get a bit spicier, that introduction. I know, you're teasing.
I just have some show notes here with the word menage a trois just scribbled out. That's all I'm going to say.
That sounds fine. That doesn't sound problematic at all. But hello, thank you for having me.
Great to have you, Natalie. We've been doing this a long time. The chip race is coming up on 11 years, and the lock-in's actually been going for about six. Most of our guests are therefore less experienced than us at broadcasting, but not so with you. You're something of a podcast veteran. The Burnley Football Club No Nay Never podcast just had its, I want to say, 634th episode. You might have squeezed another one out since I spoke to you. Can you tell us about how that gig has come about?
Yeah, definitely. I've been a podcaster and a football broadcaster 15 years now. Started when Burnley first got promoted to the Premier League back in 2009-2010 season. We beat Sheffield United in the playoffs, and it was back in the day when small teams it was the dream. If you remember, there was that phase of Burnley and Blackpool and Bournemouth, all the fairy tales getting into the Premier League. And Burnley's a very working class town. It's not an affluent town. And I think at the time there was some concern that Burnley content was going to go behind the paywalls of the big major broadcasters, and a lot of locals wouldn't, you know, who usually get their football content from the local newspapers and journalists, that they would somehow lose the narrative. And I think that's true. I think most football clubs lose their narrative when they're in the Premier League. I think the international and global news outlets take over the running of the headlines. So we started No Nay Never. It started life as a blog and then quickly became a podcast as a way to keep content local, to keep fans engaged, and to provide a free service to people who couldn't afford paywall. I wasn't the original editor. I took over, I think, maybe about 8 years ago as full-time host and editor. Still a community podcast. It's still free, and it always will be while I'm at the helm. And it's a very niche podcast. We do flirt sometimes with doing opposition views that are a bit more in depth, or we've done specials. I've interviewed Ian Wright, Alistair Campbell, Jordan North. We've done like some big one-off specials. We've also done some community work as well. We've done a lot of charity work, and this season we've just sponsored a grassroots football club to have our logo. So it's very community driven. And from that, as fan-led content has increased, particularly the rise of YouTubers over the last 5 or 6 years, we've got into a video offering, and my work has then expanded to working with some of the major broadcasters. I'm very lucky to have a column on the BBC Sport website. We work with TalkSport, who sponsor our podcast. I work with Five Live, and Premier League Productions, and it's been my first love. Like, poker came after football, but football's been my first love for many years. And yeah, it's opened quite a lot of doors. So I am therefore experienced broadcaster. It doesn't transfer to many things, but yeah, I've put the miles in, let's say that.
No, you sure are. That's amazing stuff. Dara, I'm sure you recall this. Literally minutes after we recorded our video about how we were leaving Unibet and on the lookout for a new sponsor, we bumped into Natalie in the car park of the RDS, which during the Irish Open, and she very kindly gave us some advice about our options going forward. We both said immediately after that how that gave us both a bit of a lift. Obviously, it wasn't the nicest time for us. I suppose what I'm speaking to here is encouragement and motivation. When I was a poker coach a decade ago, I absolutely saw that as part of the job. I was a cricket coach, I was a captain, and I used to take that aspect of the game really seriously, how to get the best out of people around me. Dara, you have a slate of students these days, all of whom seem to do very, very well. Aside from the fundamentals that you obviously instill, the teach a man to fish approach that you have, I know that you also motivate your students and are very good at that. What are the things you do to encourage them?
Yeah, with most of my students, they do reach a stage of sort of self-reliance as far as the technical stuff goes. They can run the solvers themselves, etc., etc. So my main function for them going forward is just kind of as a not exactly a mental game coach, but just sort of to keep them on an even keel. And if you look at, I mean, the perfect model for this is football manager interviews. Like, every football manager interview is exactly the same thing. It's trying to get the team back to the center. If they're on a really bad run, it's trying to say, no, we have to forget about what just happened. We have to concentrate on the next game. And if they're on a particularly good run, and people are saying, oh, do you think that you've got the title wrapped up now? It's trying to go, no, we haven't won anything yet. We have to focus on the next game. That's very much the job, and that is the way because humans, we tend to spiral in one of two directions. Either everything is terrible and we're never going to win again, or everything is great and we don't have to worry about anything now. And those are two dangerous states of mind. I mean, my co-author Barry Carter has written about this with Jarrod Tendler in Mental Game of Poker. There is such a thing as winner's tilt as well, and that can be just as dangerous. So yeah, it's mostly about just trying to get people back to the center, and everybody's different as well, so you have to kind of come up with different ways to get the same message across, because you can say something to one person and it really resonates and it gets them out of their slump. And you can say something to another person and it just doesn't work. I have some students who the best way to actually get them out of a sort of a mental slump is just literally to focus on the technical stuff and remind them how good they are on that stuff. But also get them sort of thinking about the most important things. So you kind of distract them away from the negative mindset. But then there's other people who do have to be coaxed out of the negative mindset and, just told that they're brilliant. And they just have to kind of, everything is, focus on the process. That's basically always the message.
Very good. Well, Natalie, back to you on this. You have a full-time job to go along with your poker, your charity, your podcast, and everything else you do. In all those walks of life, are you more of the giver or the getter of a pep talk?
Oh, that's interesting. Depends on what hat I'm wearing that day, I guess. In work, I held a senior role, and a senior management role, and I'm responsible for running a team. So I'm usually the giver of pep talks, I think, and just general mentoring in that scenario. But in other walks of life, I mean, maybe that's the case as well when it comes to the podcast. I also run the podcast team. I've got a team of 9 people who work with me on Known and Ever, and sometimes that needs pep talks in that sense. But then there's other areas of life that I need that pep talk myself. I think probably the most obvious one of those is when I'm playing poker. I'm quite a competitive person. Dara would have that fascinating time talking to me. I'm a very competitive person. I'm a very strong-minded person, and I've been incredibly fortunate to be very successful in many areas of my life, and that's quite and that carries into poker. So I am guilty of not handling tilt very well in poker because I'm very logical and I'm very results-driven, and in most areas of my life, particularly my main job, I control the narrative and I control the outcome. Gosh, my daytime job, I'm a lawyer. I'm a corporate lawyer in the corporate restructuring field. So actually, it's not just that I'm in control. It's my responsibility to make sure that those scenarios go the way that we need them to do. And if they don't, to plot the way around them and work out the strategy that's legally and commercially the right solution for our clients. So when you put me in a field that's playing poker and, there's a certain amount that's your own controllables that you can control yourself, but the very nature of poker is that there's a huge element that's outside of your control. That's the bit that gets me at poker, and those are the bits that I need the pep talk of. And I think I would add a third limb to Dara's comments there about whether you need the technical bit, saying focus on the technical to get you out of the mindset, or you need just the ego boost. I would add a third element of that, in that I'm very results focused. That's one of my pitfalls of a poker player. I'm like, no. Why did that happen? Why did they play that hand like that? They played it in a way I wasn't expecting them to, and I want to know why. And the answer is usually you can't legislate for that. They're just a human person who've played a hand. They can play it however they want. You're always going to face the uncontrollables, and my brain just does not like that at all, and I can't handle it. So I think what I would finish on this one, and I find quite interesting in both of these, whether I'm receiving or giving a pep talk and being a mentor, I think I really like to focus on a really great question that was once posed to me ages ago. And I think this is really useful both in terms of conflict resolution, but also your mindset. Whenever I'm in that position, I ask this question: do you or do I want comfort, or do you want answers? And that can sometimes completely change the dynamic of a conversation. If I'm in a work scenario and I've got a junior associate coming to me who's struggling with a case, and they're like that, there's no good me starting to talk to them about one element if they just wanted to have. They wanted to get it all out, and they just wanted to be made feel better. If they want an arm putting around them and saying, "We all make mistakes, let's forget it and move on," or if they say, "Why did this happen? I've made this mistake. What did I do wrong?" then they want answers. So I think that's definitely my approach to both of those. I think it's a really powerful tool in a lot of walks of life.
No, I love that. It's like solutions are empathy. And I think, yes, there are different moments where we want different things and maybe different people who want more of one and less of the other, or the other way around. I want to look now at a few recent results. The NAPT in Vegas has just concluded, and it was a fantastic showcase of the successful women in our game, with Jen Shahadeh coming third in the main event for 290K, Maria Konnikova winning the 5K second chance, I think for like 65K or something in that neighborhood. Paulina Loliger coming 30th in the 1K, Julie Marie Marriott coming seventh in the 1K bounty, Tanya Baltazar taking second in the horses. A lot of these, by the way. Stephanie Hagberg winning the ladies event, Eleni Raun winning the ladies high roller, Jen Harmon coming second in the 5K eight game, Kristen Fox in sixth in the 10K high roller, and last but certainly not least, Lydia Kugoda, who came sixth in the ladies event, third in the ladies high roller, and then fourth in the mystery bounty. Natalie, women have always punched statistically at their weight in the live tournament scene, but this year it actually feels like they're overperforming. I chatted to Katie Swift actually at the recent Malta Poker Festival, who said that there was a much greater cohesion with all the women in the community these days in terms of the forming of WhatsApp groups and that kind of having evolved, supporting one another, being inspired by one another, socializing together, rooming together at festivals, et cetera, et cetera. Do you think that's at least part of the reason why we're seeing all these huge results from women in 2025?
100%. She's literally taken the words out of my mouth, which is doesn't surprise me because Katie and I are good friends and we're often very aligned on the same page with things like this. When I was thinking about this topic prior to coming on the show today, I was trying. It took me not very long at all to form a view of why I think the success is becoming as prevalent as it is, and it is that support network. You know, rewind not that long ago, I remember the old EPT circuit particularly was a really challenging place for the women's market. It was back in the day when huge sponsorship deals were on offer and around the Miss Finland time and all of those things. And the ladies' events used to just be littered with people who, you know, the way they dressed and the way that they approached the game. And you could see with the way that the play was going, they were not focusing on the hands, they were not focusing on the table. They had one eye on the camera. And then when the cameras were coming, they were in engineered pro. And it was all very much geared towards career. And that's not a criticism, I'll be very clear here, because at the time that was the way to get forward. And now with the ability to have a successful career very much more in your own hands through your own content and your streaming, I think that now feels very archaic and has had its time. What's been replaced is a much less toxic environment and one that at grassroots level is really supportive. I'm not going to rehash it exactly what Kate has just said then. That has encouraged a much more longevity when it comes to women who want to come into the game and stay in the game. But what I find quite interesting as well is that when you get that support and you get that network, and then you get people who are saying, you know what, I like this game, I like the environment, I'm going to hang around a little bit, it's then encouraging more women to commit more time and more resource into studying, developing, getting to know their game. And I think that's quite a female way of approaching some things. We're often time poor. That is a cliche, doesn't mean it's not true. We are very time poor, but we're also very strict with what we invest our spare time in. And I think a lot of the women who I know have said, you know what, if I'm going to hang around Pork and I'm going to invest a full weekend away from my family playing, and I'm going to invest my money, or I'm going to stay up until 1, 2 o'clock in the morning playing online, I'm not just doing this for fun, and I'm not just doing, I'm in this because I want to be the best that I possibly can. So they are seeking out better quality coaching. They are investing their time wisely. And that to me is probably the most important factor in those results starting to show, because they are very, very clear as to what they want to do. They're not here just to have a fun, because quite frankly, we've got a million other things that we need to be doing. And we're all balancing jobs and we're all balancing family lives and commitments. We're still trying to balance stigma in certain areas. And you just think, you know what? If I'm here, I'm going to do this properly and I'm going to be professional. And I think that's a really important factor.
I love that. Dara, you just put out an article a couple of days ago about the recent successes of your friend June Jenkins, and also a few of the maybe expectations that people have of women at the table, which is not really perhaps where it should be. Certainly, I don't think it's where it should be. But I thought it was a very nicely worked article. Would you mind summarizing the themes in that?
Yeah, I mean the main idea was this. Obviously, there's a lot of talk about the very overt sexism you get in poker, which hopefully is becoming less over time. But what's not often recognized is there's a lot of unconscious sexism as well, where women are just held to a different standard to men. They're expected to behave differently, and you know that is a type of sexism as well. And then when you have women who are feisty at the table and give as good as they get, men often react in a way that they wouldn't to a man who's exhibiting the same behavior. So that's when it really gets highlighted. You know, someone like June is very much well able to give as good as she gets at the table, and that definitely discombobulates a lot of men. And you know, I had the experience that I wrote about in that article of she was at a table, she was, you know, playing the game, and I was getting messages from men at her table saying, "You need to have a word with your friend June." Now, if she was male, that would never happen. Like, nobody would ever say to me, "Your friend Lappin is an absolute arsehole. Can you come over
Whoa,
here?"
whoa, whoa. That's a completely unnecessary counterpoint or example or whatever you need to give there. Could have picked any one of any names, I'm sure, there. I'm sure you didn't really mean it there.
Yeah,
Pick it
but I've
up.
had that in the past too, and it's always with female friends, whereas and again that's actually doubling down on the sexism. It's like appealing to a man to modify the woman's behavior, which is yeah, and that's not just acceptable. So it's been happening enough in the recent past that I felt I needed to write something about it, if for no other reason for just men to read and go, okay, well, there's no point in messaging Doug about that because he's not going to do anything. But yeah, and you know, it comes back to I've talked as well about a conversation that I railed in Vegas between three of the most intelligent women in poker, Caitlin Aronwine, Jen Shahade, and Alex O'Brien. And Alex actually made that comment in those exact words. Can we stop holding women to a higher standard? Why should they be judged any differently from men? And yeah, that sort of cemented the idea in my head. So that's where the blog came from.
Makes sense that Alex O'Brien would specifically say that, given how feisty she was at the recent Malta Poker Festival. I wasn't getting messages from people going, your friend's a little feisty here. I could hear her from two tables over having a go at people. So but again, I'm all for that as well. I enjoy the feistiness. It would be a bit hypocritical if I didn't. Speaking of women in poker, the new documentary No Limit at least attempted to shine a light on this subject, but I feel like it did it in a kind of a wonky way. A couple of episodes ago, Hayley Hanna was on the show last week, and she agreed that it was a bit cringe how that narrative was weaved. I have watched all four episodes of this show so far. I have to say, finding it fairly tough viewing. Episode three was a particular slog. Episode four was actually the best of the lot, but that's not saying very much. I know Dara hasn't watched this, so there's no point in asking me a question about it. And I probably won't watch it, so there's probably no point in asking a question down the line either. Natalie, you did your homework. Thank you very much for doing so. I made you watch at least some of this. I don't know how much you watch. What do you think?
I did not get to the end of episode four, full disclosure. I'm going to be an absolute lawyer here and argue both sides. As a piece of television for a poker player, an experienced poker player, I didn't enjoy it. But and I don't think that's necessarily because it was bad in any way. It was just the content and the level and the format that it was filmed in. It just really wasn't particularly my cup of tea. It reminded me almost of the straight to TV American like cruise ship documentaries, that kind. So it's obviously filmed in a certain genre, which that to me felt a little that didn't really suit the poker game. And I think we're a little bit biased, but poker's a really cool hobby. It's a great thing to get involved in. I think sometimes we forget this, particularly in a long slog, or if we're a little bit jaded because we've been in the Rio for 6 weeks and we've had enough. But it's still, you talk to people outside of poker and it's got this James Bond idea that it's a really cool thing too, and it is. So the genre that they chose to record it in, to me, didn't sit with the subject matter. I felt it was a little bit clunky in that respect. So as an experienced poker player watching it, and as a television fan of a certain format, I didn't enjoy it as a product. But I don't think I'm the target audience, which is where I came to when I was watching this. So I think if I then argue the other side of this to me feels like, whether intentionally or not, a piece of television which is designed to bring poker to non-poker players across the world, to either reduce the stigma of it, to get a foot flow through of new traffic in terms of new players, or to just get clicks essentially, or just be a piece of television. And I think if you try and put yourself in a position of wherever we were when we started playing, if we watch that piece of television now, if I got my sister to watch it, who's never played and quite frankly doesn't understand it, I suspect she would enjoy it significantly more than I did. So I think that's an important distinction I think we need to make.
That's fair. Actually, I've been focusing so much on sort of the unlikability of a lot of the people in it and the lack of drama, frankly. Actually, that's a great point you just made about the sort of mise-en-scene, how the sort of rendering of it is not really compatible with the content. I think that's actually a very sharp point. Dara, one thing I'm always conscious of is how a show like this isn't made for us, echoing obviously Natalie's point there. It's important to try to look at it through fresh eyes of a newcomer to poker. That's probably very hard for us to do. Figuring out who your audience is obviously very important. And actually, on that, it made me reflect on our own output, and I wanted to come clean about our own struggles maybe in the recent past on this. While the slate of Chip Race content is much the same as it's always been, and actually probably even more of it, thanks to the sponsorship of WPT Global, that same sponsor have been encouraging us to do more short form, and it's fair to say that it's not been easy to find our niche within that. It's not our natural thing. We've been trying different things with various degree of cringe factor, but actually we think we might have finally found something that works a bit more in the short form way, and that's our recent back and forths on the hand breakdowns. Why do you think they have clicked, and do you agree that more of that is the way to go for us?
Yeah, well, first of all, it's no surprise to me that we struggled in the real format. I mean, we're podcasters. It's long form. Also, we both have faces for radio, so
Whoa, again, just, speak for yourself.
Sticking the camera in front of us and getting us to talk is not necessarily a great idea. I mean, obviously we've done lots of interviews down the year in front of the camera, but that's a kind of a different skill. But it's all about like just kind of just knowing your audience. And like for me, I've always known that my audience responds differently to different types of stuff I tweet or content. If I tweet about, the weather or politics, okay, yeah, people are like, whatever, what do you know about that? How do you know better about that than me? But if I tweet about something that I'm actually known for, like running, for example, or strategy, then people engage much more. And I think that's kind of that is a sweet spot. It's always been strategy. Also, like most people actually, people don't like when you whine about bad beats, which is why I never do it. But people are actually very generous when you're sort of when you win something. My most liked tweets are always like just something stupid, like I won this tournament or I won this satellite. So you kind of, and these are the people that you never really hear from on social media because it's the trolls and the critics who respond to stuff, but the people who just kind of nod and go, "That's nice." The most you're ever going to get out of them is they're going to like the tweet. But you suddenly realize that there's a lot more of them than the other people. You can pay too much attention to the sort of like sharp voices in the community and the trolls. But yeah, I guess on the strategy thing, and I mean, we have tried lots of different things, and sometimes there's been sort of a good response at the start, but then it's fallen off fairly quickly as the novelty worn off. I'm talking about within the real format. But with the strategy, actually, it seems to be growing as we put out more and more. And I mean, I guess it's just the perfect combination. Like you play the clueless poker player who doesn't know what to do in a spot and has no real clue and kind of flounders around and gives some like old school logical thinking. And then I come in like and I'm the now here's the science guy with the solver and I explain the solver output. And I think that has value for our audience. They're kind of intrigued when they see the hand, and you actually often express a lot of the same thoughts that they would express about the thing. And then we get to see whether it actually holds up under scrutiny or not.
I'm catching a lot of strays today. That's all I've noticed. From the cringe to the outright bizarre, I wanted to talk now about the recent. And if you missed it, by the way, very reasonable that you did. But the recent match, heads-up match between Club WPT Gold ambassador Doug Polk and scammer turned crypto casino owner. Don't think I can get sued for saying that. Aussie monarch Cotola. To catch anyone up who hasn't been following the poker adventures of Cotola, back in August, he began his series of nosebleed heads-up invitational matches in Tallinn, dubbed the Monarch Millions. He played half million and 1 million buy-in games, mostly losing to Cian Mochrie, Elias Talvidi, and Dan Jungleman Cates, before going to North Cyprus and the Onyx Club to up the stakes. Again, Dan Cates was the beneficiary, winning a further $13 million from Cotola, after which Victor Limitless Malinowski and Alex Foxen took a few bob off him as well. The next stop was the Triton Super High Roller Series in Jeju in September, where he played against Bjorn Lee. Four $4 million matches were played, three of which were won by Lee. And then that followed a $16 million match, which actually Cotola won. So he got a little bit back there. Since then, Cotola has been vocal about his desire to play some more high-profile poker players. People like Helmut and Negreanu have been touted, as has the misogynist influencer and alleged human trafficker Andrew Tate. Again, don't think I can be sued for saying that. The purpose of these games seems to be publicity and part of a broader marketing strategy for both himself and his business ventures. That brings us to the online clash with Polk, hosted by Club WPT Gold, during which Polk won three out of four heads-up matches in the space of about 100 minutes to secure a profit of $1.2 million. Not too shabby for Doug. Now, despite the stakes, the poker community have not really gotten very excited about these matches. The media are similarly unenthused. I would include myself in that. So I want to talk about two things, why that might be, and given his shady background and frequent racist comments, is it good to be platforming this Catola guy at all? Natalie, I'll start with you. In my article last week, I said that the matches lacked soul, romance, or jeopardy. Do you agree? And if so, why do you think that is?
I do agree completely. If I can maybe address the character point to start with, just because I just want to get that over and done with. No, we absolutely shouldn't be giving these people platforms, and I don't think that necessarily just extends to poker. I think that is in all walks of life, but I think we're in a really bizarre geopolitical culture at the moment where just the people, just a bizarre level of people across political spheres and in the entertainment industry, and who are just being given these immense platforms to speak horrible, vile things that, or to behave in a way that is just unacceptable, or in some instances criminal, and they're given a platform that is being celebrated, and their army behind them are, Joy Barton this week's just finished his sentencing for his trial, and I saw him when he came out of his trial, and he had all of his supporters all saying this is a disgrace, free speech is done, and there seems to be a blurring of the lines between freedom of speech and freedom of thought and freedom of religion, et cetera, and hate speech and hate crime, and where society was once very clear on where those lines are drawn. I think there's been a blurring over the last 5 or 6 years, and now blatant lying and gaslighting on political stands and across the world is just normal. And I think a lot of us have just kind of given up and just been like, oh, it's another day, it's another. So the poker world, which I think has always had more of a freedom, I think, because or not deliberately, but it's always felt more free, and it's always had a wider range of characters who have been able to maintain a voice in the poker industry. I question whether or not as a community and as operators, we need to be doing more to show a stronger resistance to giving people a platform who, quite frankly, don't deserve it, and quite frankly, who are influencing generations of people who are susceptible to being influenced in a way we don't deem to be right. So, and that brings us on to, I think, the way that we view these contents that are coming out. I think there's two things for me. If I take aside the fact that I don't have any desire in seeing certain people, there's a very well-known British poker player who I will turn off as soon as he somehow gets airtime.
Don't need to
So
bring Ian Simpson into this. That's kind of harsh.
I know. Sorry, Ian. It's Barry I'm talking about, really. Like my poker brother Barry. No, I'm not really. I love him. So I think whenever one of those characters run, then that's a no for me. But I think generally speaking, I refer back to my point I made earlier about the women's game, about being time poor and about having to be selective over what I choose to consume and what I choose to use as training material. High stakes heads up matches, or high stakes in any way, shape, or form, it feels very unattainable and very unachievable to me. Even if I was playing full time, it just doesn't feel like it's a world that I will ever operate in. So I don't necessarily attribute a significant amount of value to what I'm going to get from watching something like that. And I'm more than happy for Dara yourself to come in and correct this. But at my level, the way I play, I don't see much difference in terms of strategy between playing a $1 pot and playing a $100,000 pot. The rules of the game are still the same. The strategy is still the same. And I apply the same commitment and application to training and playing the right game if I'm playing a $5 tournament online as if I'm playing the $1,000 ladies event at the WSOP. I address my mind, or at least I try to. I'm not always successful at it. So to me, it doesn't matter that he's winning 1.2 million. It doesn't matter that it's high stakes. What I'm interested in looking at is two individuals within the industry whose game I admire, who I consider to be strong players, who I think approach the game in the right way, and quite frankly, who deserve a platform. That is something I will invest my time in. I don't know if I necessarily need the jeopardy or the drama that you referred to for it to be entertainment for me, but then maybe I'm just looking for something that's slightly different. Maybe I'm looking for more training and development as opposed to entertainment. I think maybe that comes back to the comfort versus results point, right? Are you looking for training or are you looking for entertainment? And I think the heads up match will differ depending on who you put on there and what you want from it. So yeah, I'm just as a general rule, the big, the big massive events with these players who are perhaps a little bit further removed from society and what the rest of us deal with when we play poker, just doesn't generally interest me. So it wasn't something that was on my radar to watch, I'm afraid.
Yeah, no, great points overall. Dara, Katola has been banned by Twitter actually for his behavior. He's said some horrendously racist things. He admits to being a scammer when he was younger, although he does claim to be reformed. It's problematic for operators to be platforming him. And obviously, it's problematic for us to talk about this, given that Club WPT Gold platformed him a few days ago for this match. But I think it is still worth having this conversation. You know, obviously to some people, almost like tapping into the freedom thing that Natalie pointed to, is that, you know, sort of like platform these people and let people then judge what they really think of them when platformed. Or I suppose the other side of that coin is don't platform them because it's really kind of distasteful to have them being given an opportunity to have their opinions maybe sent to a wider audience. And it's tricky to know. I actually do genuinely believe it's tricky to know where to fall on that, because I often feel like if you don't platform people and they get to kind of weave the narrative of I'm being banned from platforms and I'm being told I can't do it, that almost helps them amplify their message. Whereas if you just let them say their ugly, horrible message, hopefully the vast majority of people will just see it for what it is.
Yeah, well, that's always the freedom, the sort of freedom of speech is an absolute argument that people should see to that. But I think poker in particular is problematic because, you know, poker has always depended on some fairly dodgy individuals providing the money. Like, poker is a machine which runs on people being prepared to feed money in at one end, and then it gets spat out at the other end to the winning players. And in the middle, you have this game which then self-sustains. And, you know, down the years, poker players have had to make peace with the fact that, you know, sometimes the money is coming from very, very horrible individuals, criminals. A lot of time, money laundering is going on, etc., etc. And that is just kind of, that has been a historical reality of poker. Now, I think there's less impetus for that nowadays because poker is genuinely a global game, and you know there are enough recreationals who are happy to play for fun, and you know, lose at a reasonable rate, and some of them will win in the same way that, you know, the National Lottery is a negative EV game, but still some people will win over a relatively short sample. So I think there's less excuse, let's say, for the whole, oh, well, we have to keep these people on board because that's where the money comes from. And I think it can actually count. It in some ways it can serve to hinder the development of the game if we hold these guys up as sort of what you should aspire to, and then recreational players see that, and okay, so you want me to be like a, you know, a scumbag criminal or whoever it is who's being platformed, and then people go, okay, well, I guess that's not for me then. And you know, one of the problems we've always had in poker is that people sort of see what they see, you know. The old days, you had these loud, brash characters who lambasted everybody at the table, and they were quote unquote great for poker because they were entertaining. Because a lot of people who came into poker were attracted by that, but we'll never know how many people saw that on TV and thought, oh, I never want to play poker. I don't want to play with that type of person. So we kind of just go based on what we have. I also think there's a difference between the US and this side of the pond on that, both culturally and in terms of what's popular. I think culturally, Americans are much happier with the idea of, you know, loud, brash, even unsavory individuals just for pure entertainment purposes. But also, you know, Americans watch a lot of live cash streams, and we don't. We're on this side, we're far more interested in tournaments. But you know, the American scene has, you know, The Lodge, Hustler Live, all of these cash streams. And when you see the characters in that, it none of them are as objectionable as Aussie is, but there is that sort of pantomime, you know, almost wrestling type characters with their very clear, very simplistic also personality types, appealing to different audiences. So I think, you know, it kind of, you know, maybe it makes sense in the States. We're not American. We can't really quite, we can't really speak to that. And it was Club WPT, which is the American version of the WPT family, or the American branch of the American family that sponsored this. So, maybe it resonates more over there. I don't know. I mean, I'm a big fan of Doug. I really like Doug. I think he's very entertaining, but you'd have to pay me money to watch him play against somebody who's really bad at poker and is also, by all accounts, a fairly horrible human being.
Yeah, like, to Doug's credit, he was there to do a job. He took the guy's money and he was trying to make it entertaining along the way, having a bit of banter. But it was like trying to get blood from a stone. And really, Aussie was just sitting there in the darkest room imaginable, almost like with a teenager sense of humor. It was just very, very weird. Actually, the whole thing was just so weird. Anyway, moving on, and turning now to the end of the year and all the big tournaments that will be going on around the globe. December has been a hotbed of poker in recent years, and 2025 is going to be no different. EPT Prague has nudged itself ever so slightly to earlier in December so as not to completely clash with WPT World Championship at the Wynn. Less friendly is, of course, is WSOP Paradise, which has plonked itself straight down on top of the WPT dates as it has done for the last couple of years. We've covered this, let's call it a Mexican standoff, in years gone by, and nothing has really changed. So I won't just repeat myself from, the analysis we've done for the last couple of years. But I know Dara is going to Prague and I will be there joining him for at least the first maybe 5 or 6 days. I'm also heading over to commentate once again on the World Championship, something I'm very, very excited to do. It was great fun last year working with Jesse Sylvia, Jamie Kerstetter, and Poker Face Ash. Dara, I think I'll make the next lock-in a live vlog episode from Prague. Are you looking forward to that?
Yeah, I'm very looking forward to it. Prague has always been my favorite EPT. I haven't gone in recent years because we've been in the Wynn, obviously, and then before that there was lockdown. So it's actually quite a few years since I went to Prague. Even before poker, Prague was a city I enjoyed visiting. One of my biggest running achievements came in the Czech Republic in the World Indoor 6 Hour Championships. Hard to believe that that's a thing, World Indoors 6 hours, but it actually is. Our late great friend Jan Sukanek, was obviously born in Prague, was very, very culturally Czech. So it's always a place where I kind of just felt very much at home. Great restaurants. It's a great time of the year to be there as well. So yeah, very much looking forward to that.
Great stuff. And Natalie, I did leave one out, the one that I know Barry Carter believes will actually eclipse the other three, and become the biggest event, in December. And that is, of course, the Party Poker London right before Christmas. You've been a Party Poker Live ambassador, this year. How have you enjoyed being in that role? And are you looking forward to London?
I have enjoyed it immensely. It wasn't something that I ever thought was on my agenda. It wasn't something I was actively seeking. It was an opportunity that was presented to me at the beginning of the year. And it was just pitched. It was a brand that I really like working with. I liked the recreational level. I liked the commitment to qualifiers and getting many people who couldn't necessarily aspire to a £500 buy-in to get them to play this. The team is fantastic, and it just felt like a really good fit. I've enjoyed it immensely. I think as the legs have gone on and the ambassador team has become more settled, we've developed a really strong relationship. Really looking forward to next year. We'll see what next year brings for the Party Poker Tour. But this year's been phenomenal. London, the tour in 2025 has been bookended by the two London stops. The first one was our opening one, and I think most of the team will be open to admit that it was a little bit, not hit and miss, but we were very much trying to find our feet. It was a much bigger ambassador pool, and we were all just trying to see if we could get this off the ground. Whereas by the time we've got just 12 months later to London closing off the year, it feels like we know what we're doing. We've got a really clear idea of what the schedule looks like. The events are great. We've got some really fun games on it. Some of the side events are really low buy-ins, which is just really great fun. If it gets to Saturday night and you're just looking for some fun hyper games, Barry Carter's Trophy, of course, which is now the Barry Carter
Oh
Madness
God, they're
Trophy.
not calling it that, are they? Oh God.
I'm sorry to say we are. That's become that. It's just a really nice camaraderie, and it feels like a little family. Myself, Sam, Barry, Joe, and the Staples brothers have flown across every single leg for it as well. And it's just a really lovely family. London for me is particularly exciting. I do share your views, by the way. I think Prague is a fantastic one, and if it wasn't for London this year, I probably would have gone to that. And it's been a while since I went. But London is probably my favourite city in the world. Probably wouldn't live there for obvious reasons, but I'm very fortunate that my work, my day job, depending on what hat I've got on that day, my day job takes me to London a lot for work, but I do get to then come home and don't have to stay there. I love the vibe. I love London, and I love London particularly at Christmas. So to have the final leg of this year's tour at Christmas in London, with a team of people that I've got on really, really well with, in a event that's brought me some success this year as well. And I think that's actually a really important point. And I think this is sometimes overlooked, particularly when you are starting a venture like this for the first time and you don't necessarily have the experience of it. What signing up with Party Poker has done for me this year is it's given me five festivals in a year where I've known that I've been able to play as a recreational player a £500 main event, which is outside of most recreational players' bankrolls, not every single leg, particularly if you want to have maybe one or two bullets at it. And that has been exposed to that level of ability and on the circuit to that regularity has really improved my live game this year. And I think it's something that I can't overlook. It's been a fantastic opportunity from that perspective. You're almost getting you're getting a risk-free shot at A, decent money, and B, the opportunity to learn from some of the best players that are out there playing at that level. So I'm really pleased with that. But I intend to sign off the year with Christmas in London. We're going to dress Sam up, I think, as Santa. We're all going to stick some Christmas jumpers on. I don't think we're going to get Barry in a Christmas jumper, but before that, actually, before we get there, as a warm-up to London, some of the Party Poker team, we are going to play the APAT Squads event. Lee Wiltshire will never forgive me if I don't manage to get this in. We're going to play the Squads event, the APAT Squads event, which is a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant event at the beginning of December, and we're entering a Party Poker team. So the idea being that we spread the word about the Party Poker tour and see if people will come and play with us. Completely get it. It's a massively oversaturated market, but if people are looking to build their game up from around the 100, 150 mark to build up to a £500 mark, I think the Party Poker Tour gives a really great opportunity to get that level.
Yeah, that brings me actually to my next point. We're obviously big fans of APAT and what those guys do as well. Des and he put in Trojan work to support sort of grassroots poker. And grassroots poker is the question I want to put to you, Dara. I know you're going to get across to London just before Christmas to join the guys at this one. And I think the one consistent thing we've taken away from the going to Glasgow and going to Birmingham this year on that tour is the sort of appeal to grassroots poker. You know, we're obviously WPT Global ambassadors, and that's, you know, the flag we fly if you like. But as ambassadors, we've always maintained and genuinely believed that, you know, your job is being an ambassador to players first, and having, you know, buy-ins that are recreational poker friendly, and actually maybe especially something like the WPT Global IPO does this as well, being that sort of in between the maybe pub poker, casino poker kind of buy-ins, and then even like the 550 or 1K tours, like having that stuff that's in that 300, 500 region, but especially having side events that are in that 100 quid kind of region, I think is so massive for growing the game. And it does feel like other operators over the years have kind of forgotten about that tier and have kind of moved on with their games getting bigger and bigger, especially their you know, traveling tours. Whereas it's nice and refreshing to see that that's not the case with this one.
Yeah, I think the problem is like tour operators have an incentive to make the buy-in as big as they can possibly think they can get away with it, because you know rake is always a percentage of the buy-in. People will happily play 50 rake on a 500, but they won't pay it on a 100. They'll go crazy if they see 100 plus 5 plus 50. So, but it's no cheaper to run you know, a small buy-in than a big buy-in. So operators, their natural incentives is always towards bigger and bigger buy-ins, but then you can completely mess with the ecosystem when you do that. I watched a very good review recently of the Manchester stop from PokerStars by Peg and Blaze. And one of the points they made was that there just weren't enough small side events. And when there aren't enough small side events, the recreations just don't come in through the doors. And that's something that Party clearly understand. They have a very nicely put together schedule with lots of small buy-in events. And you know, some people come in maybe just to play a small buy-in event, but then they'll do well and they'll get a couple of grand out of that. And suddenly now they're happy to play the main event. And the whole system kind of feeds itself. Similar to Natalie also, I mean, London is one of my favorite cities. I have sort of a lifelong love affair with London. You know, I support the best team that comes from London.
Oh God, what have you done, Darren? What have you said?
You know, my pretty much most of my favorite music artists and writers, a lot of them have come from London. First girlfriend came from London. I've been going backwards and forth to London all my adult life. It is an amazing city. Officially, for the 11th year in a row, believe it or not, to the best city in the world. And that doesn't surprise me. You know, if you go on Elon's hellscape now, you might think that London has fallen, as the great phrase goes, and it's turned into a hellhole. It isn't. It's still an amazing city with amazing people, great restaurants, great public transport, great everything, basically, just great culture. So yeah, very much looking forward to Party Poker London as well.
Yeah, London's calling, not falling, for sure. I do believe that. And actually, speaking of which, I think I'm going to chance a leaky lap. And I was told don't say this till next week, but this show's going to come out the weekend, and I think I will chance it. On the subject of grassroots poker, one of the best poker tournaments in Ireland every year is the European Deep Stacks. It's had some fantastic winners. It's had some very, dodgy winners as well that we don't want to talk about, right, Dara? We don't want to mention people who won it a long time ago.
Well, I mean, Aidan Quinlan was a popular winner, to be fair.
Very, oh no, Aidan was a very popular winner. Now, of course, Dara won this one, actually probably launched his live career in a big way. I won't say how many years ago.
Yeah,
But it.
when they make the movie, they'll definitely fudge it. They won't mention that it was a five-way chop. They'll just show me holding the trophy, and they definitely won't. They'll stick to the often held belief that it was the first ever live tournament I played in, which is kind of a narrative I pushed at the time so that
Yeah.
people would play against me in a certain way. But yeah, no, obviously very happy memories of the European Deep Stack. I actually final tabled it 2 years later as well. And I actually had a deep run in the years in between. So for the first few European Deep Stacks, it was my favorite tournament for obvious reasons. Then it started to clash with EPTs, EPT Deauville specifically, at the time where I started playing EPTs. So there was a long period where I just didn't play it anymore. But in recent years, I've started playing it again. And yeah, it's a lot of people have said to me they think it's the best tournament because of the structure.
Yeah, structure is amazing.
Structure is absolutely amazing. And for recreationals, it's the perfect structure because they have lots of chips at the start to try things out, not to necessarily be at risk to play themselves into the game. You know, a lot of pros sometimes complain, and you know, we do too, that structures can be too deep at the start and kind of meaningless. But that's, you know, recreations like that, that really appeals to recreations.
Absolutely. So the news that I am hopefully not going to get in trouble for breaking is that WPT Global will be sponsoring the Dublin Poker Festival. Obviously, the European Deep Stacks is the sort of flagship main event within that. And we're very proud to do so. Obviously, it's a bit of a passion project for Dara and I to find as many partnerships as we can in Ireland. Speaking to that, Dara, maybe, obviously I mentioned the buy-in level, but what's lovely about that festival is there's a few higher buy-ins, but there's actually loads of lower buy-ins as well. Your thoughts on WPT Global sponsoring that one?
Yeah, no, it's great. The IPO was such a massive success. WPT Global really brought so much to it. I mean, it's been sponsored by lots of people in the past, but I think WPT Global, in terms of the stream they delivered for people to watch at home, just the atmosphere was on the next level. Interestingly too, like the Deep Stack, like all tournaments in Ireland, the buy-in levels have kind of jumped around as the economy has gone up and down. You know, back when I won it in 2008 or whenever it was a 1500 buy-in. Came down to 1K, it's gone down even lower. This year they're moving it back up again. And I know some recreations are a little bit, you know, they're like, oh, well, it's a bit too much now, it's 700. But I think we have reached the point now where we need to have something between that sort of 300 to 500 level and the 1K, which is the Irish Open. And I think the Deep Stack, with its wonderful structure, is the perfect tournament to try that out in. So, it'll be interesting to see how it goes on that front. I think it will change the nature of the tournament as well. Like when the buy-in was quite low and it's unlimited re-entry, people will often just fire it. as sort of like, well, I'm willing to do three or four bullets, so they'll blast away. But I think with it being a 700, people will play it more seriously. And actually, I think that can often be a more fun type of tournament. A lot of people just don't like the feeling that it's just a lottery. Everybody's just rustling their chips in at the first chance they get.
Absolutely. To let you know, the festival is the last 2 weeks of February. I think you can go onto the Dublin Poker Festival website and find the exact dates and the exact times of every tournament on that schedule already. I know that we will be endeavouring to put satellites up on our WPT Global schedule as soon as possible. Could be as soon as next week or might be in a couple of weeks' time, but that's definitely on the horizon as well. So you can get in for 60, $70. It's going to be something of that nature. Obviously, the global sites in dollars, maybe it'll be an $80 to, 10x your way into a 700 euro seat. But, it's going to be something of that nature. And I really hope I don't get fired for having leaked that now. Finally, Natalie, on top of all the other stuff you do, one massive, massive passion project for the last few years has been your charity Hearts of Queens. Which we've only been too delighted, to be honest, to feature on the show before. Launched on International Women's Day in March 2022, the organization works within the poker industry to bring awareness to and raise funds for women's charities. The aim, I know, is to give something back to the communities that we visit on our various poker tours. And so far, the project has made significant contributions to the local communities in Manchester, Dublin, Malta, Glasgow, Nottingham, Blackpool, Las Vegas, and lots of other places as well. Christmas is always a big time for charities, of course, and I know Hearts of Queens does an annual Christmas appeal. What is your specific aim for this Christmas?
It's the same as it always has been. The Christmas appeal is the third limb of our projects that we work with. The first one being our Fresh Start boxes, which was our bread and butter, where people come to. I've got a lot of things here. People come to poker tournaments with items. I'm in the middle of, you could see off camera here, in the middle of doing a conveyor belt of Fresh Start boxes, and it's all stacked up here. They bring items, we put them together for shelters. The second one being the Clean Water Campaign, which is our sort of world global piece, which looks at washing facilities in third world countries for period and for women and children to get to work and school. And the Christmas appeal is the one that looks specifically at shelters. So the idea is that we try and raise as much money as possible to pay for as many shelters as we can for the UK-based charity Refuge over the Christmas period. It costs them £500 per shelter per day to run a shelter in the UK, and we have been consistent. We've done three back-to-back fundraisers. It's a fundraiser. It's mainly a fundraiser because every year it gets to November, and I remember that I haven't sorted out getting the paperwork that I need. So I will do that by next year. But so what we do is it's a fundraiser where we ask people to donate to Refuge through their Just Give It, through the Just Giving page that we set up, and everybody who donates is eligible for one entry per pound unit that they donate. I think that's right. Or maybe one. No, maybe it's one ticket per donation actually. Into a prize draw, and we ask poker operators and poker players and people across the community to donate prizes for that one. So it's in the final stages at the moment for this year. But again, you can expect to see merchandise, hopefully tickets, and coaching packages as well. It's going to be a slightly smaller event this year than it has been in previous years, mainly because we've done some bigger events this year, and with all the best one in the world, a few live things have taken over this year. And it also feels like we're in a really nice place where this may change its format next year. So we are sort of finishing off this year with the usual format, in a slightly smaller field, but it's a fantastic cause. And then hopefully when we get into 2026, I will have a little bit more space and time to start. We've done 5 years by that point. So it feels like it's a really good time to have a refresh and to have a look at what we're doing. But right now, where we've got to, we've raised something like £17,500 for charity. There's been thousands and thousands of items that have come through my conveyor belt. This is my Hearts of Queens office that have come through. We have sent boxes after boxes into shelters across the world. We've increased exposure, and it's also encouraged and started little side projects as well, which has been really, really great. Actually, I've absolutely loved. I get people coming to me to say, I'm going to do this at this case because you've inspired me to do that. And they are in their own little bubble in somewhere in Ireland or England or wherever. And they've run their own event and they send things through us so we can help promote them. And it's just getting people thinking more altruistically about what we give back as poker players into the community. We've always been a very privileged group of individuals. We get to play this fantastic game, and I've always said, if you've got spare money to spend £100 on a poker tournament on a Saturday night, you're doing okay. So just maybe think about what we deliver back into the community. And it's an amazing passion project, but it's one that belongs to all of us. I'm just the organizer and the founder, but there are people who've worked with us, including yourselves, since day one, who take an exact equal share of thanks and support for what we've done. It's really, really great. So if you do listen to this and you want to get involved, the website is heartsofqueens.org. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, join and come and see what you can do. And in 2026, I think there's going to be a few exciting things. So it's good.
Well, you're too kind. It is an amazing cause, and that's terrific work that you do. I wish you all the best with that drive. It remains for me to thank now our guest this week, Nelly Bromley. It's always great to be with you.
Thank you. It's great to be asked. I'm really grateful. Thank you. I love this show. So, and I love you guys. So thank you, Gosh. It's been lovely to be here.
And Dara, thank you so much.
Thank you, David. Yeah, looking forward to seeing Natalie in London. I similar to Barry, I have very high hopes for this event. I think it's going to be a massive success. Like, the biggest success in Ireland this year was Killarney, and that was largely because people knew that David Lappin wasn't going to be there. So the news that you're going to be otherwise employed in the WPT, I think that's nothing but positive.
Four. I'm counting it now. That's four times.
That is four. Dara, I can't let you go without just, you can't tease me that way. Who's your football team?
Arsenal.
Oh, for the love of, okay.
Well, you have to remember, like, when
Could
I
be
start
worse.
when I got into football mid-70s, and the only thing I decided I was going to support whoever had the most Irish players at the time. And at the time, there were six players from Ireland on the Arsenal team, which was more than anybody else. Three from the north, three from the south. And of course, since then, they've almost never had an Irish player at all. So, but you know, when you start supporting somebody, you're pot committed. On that, actually, like, Irish people are also allowed to have a second team. This is just the way we are. Like, local rivalries don't mean anything to us. Like, I never met a Spurs fan until I was about 30. So Arsenal Spurs meant nothing. United, Liverpool, they were the rivals. But my second team at the time was West Brom. But in recent years, I've actually found myself the second result I look for is Burnley.
Oh, I love this.
If not.
A lot of people say that to me. I think I've got people like actually involved in Burnley just because I just don't stop talking about them. I have to say, actually, I am a huge fan of your women's team, the Arsenal women's WSL team. I love Leah Williamson. I think she's an inspiration. But I just think as a team, I like the way that they've integrated themselves in as a club as a whole. I think they are trailblazers in the UK for championing women's football, and they're just very enjoyable to watch. So I will let you have that. And of course, you've got Katie McCabe, who is in just like absolutely the legend. So, okay, that's not too bad. I'll let you have off that.
Okay, on that final note, so that there isn't a fight, because it could still break out, I'm conscious of that. Now we've finally found a civil tone. Good night, everyone.